Your marriage is the marriage to your kids. If they see you and your wife screaming and yelling at each other, not spending time together, that's the pattern of marriage they're going to expect when they finally grow up and get married. But the Bible says that marriage is to be held in honor among all, and that includes your kids. So your spouse is your priority. And if you put your spouse as your priority, you're also prioritizing your kids. Because if you allow life to revolve around your kids, what are they going to expect when they get married? For there to revolve around them. So what you have to do is you have to set a precedent for your kids when they grow up, because most everybody wants to get married. Show them how it's done, not by words, some about words, but mostly action. Again, going back to servanthood. When each spouse serves the other, now your kids are seeing what servanthood looks like.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
Today I'm with John. He is the Blind Fury, aka the Blind Fury. He's a dad of three grown children, 26, 28, and 30. And he spent several years being a single parent, and ultimately he's got full custody of his children. But he's also legally blind, and he's a Christian inspirational speaker. He's a marriage minister and the founder of a marriage ministry called Marital Monkey. He is also the author of two books, one called The Godly Strong, Love Like a Man. And what's the name of the other book?
Stop Your Whining, Legally Blind with 20/20 Vision.
Stop Your Whining, Legally Blind with 20/20 Vision. You can find him on theblindfury.com. And John, I also read that you're a drummer and a nationally ranked bowler. Is that true?
That is true.
That's pretty amazing. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
So let's get started. John, can you tell us about some of the most impactful events of your life?
Oh my goodness. How long is this interview again? Well, I had a great upbringing. I had great parents, great grandparents. In 1980, I ended up being diabetic and should have died then because my sugar was so high. And then in 2006, I ended up with double pneumonia. They called my mom from out west on a trip and said, "You need to get home." I survived that. And then in 2008, I was a newlywed. And about 3.5 months into our marriage, I got really, really sick and should have died. That was the one, Stop Your Whining, the book Stop Your Whining tells that story. And it's pretty wild, but I had three major brain diseases at one time and I had no immune system to fight them. And so I had cerebral histoplasmosis, encephalitis, and meningitis at the same time. And that's when I lost the vision, or it expedited the vision loss, I should say.
So did you have full vision up until then?
Yes. I drove to Arkansas in March, and in May, I was fighting for my life. In June, I was almost completely blind.
Wow. What a fast transition.
Yeah. Yeah, you could say that. And then the woman I was married to, at the time that I met her, I had 50-50 custody of my kids. And we were married for 9 years. And then a month and about 3 weeks after our 9th anniversary, she suddenly passed away. So we actually, you'll probably touch on this, but we had full custody of my kids at that time. So those are some pretty big impactful things. I could probably give you more, but there you go.
Yeah, that's huge. So you had children in 2008 when you lost your vision. You had children at that time, right?
That's correct.
So what effect did that have on how you fathered your children? Clearly that was a dramatic change in how you would engage with your family. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, one thing I wanted to do was leave an example that life is going to sometimes walk up and punch you straight in the face, even when you don't ask for it, kind of like a sucker punch. But life happens. And there's a saying that I love, and I think it was Chuck Swindoll that said it, but 10% of life is what happens to you, but 90% of life is how you respond. And so I wanted to respond in a positive way for my kids to be able to see an example of life might sucker punch you, but if you don't get off the mat, that's when you lose. And so I still went to their games. I couldn't see them. So people would sit there and commentate to me. I didn't use it as an excuse to not go. I was still there. And you know what? The kids remember that. They remember the involvement of their dad. So basically, I just adapted my life and they jumped in and they learned how to help me. they kind of stepped up their game, especially after Sherry passed away. So that's kind of how it all went down. I just tried to be an example for them.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. That must have been humbling, I would think, to go from not needing help to then needing help in that, something that you hadn't needed it, at least in that way before. And from your children, they must have had to jump in a very different way. You must have developed a relationship with them that allowed that transition to happen smoothly. What was your relationship like before that?
My kids and I were super close. They were all athletes, and I was very involved there. I coached their teams. I played in a Christian metal band at one point, and we signed a small record deal, so we were playing a whole lot. And they went to the concerts with me.
This is you were a drummer. This is where your drumming skills come from.
Yes. Yeah. And my son would be my roadie, and my girls would, they would just be there to support. And we were just a really close family. We would take road trips together. This is as a single dad, by the way, the band and the road trips. I'm talking in my single dad days. We went to South Carolina for a road trip. We've gone to Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge for a road trip. I used to take them to concerts galore. Again, they traveled with the band. I was at all of their sporting events. But I think one thing that dads don't realize, here's an example. You have to remember, it's about the kids when you're raising them. You're training them to spread their wings and fly. And one of my favorite stories, and this is going to sound minor, but my youngest daughter and I still talk about this to this day. When I was a single dad and I'm doing the laundry, I would have her help me do the laundry when she was, I don't know, I can't remember the age. She was probably 7. She would stand next to me when I would pull the clothes out of the washer. Now, it's an extra step to hand her the clothes and have her throw it in the dryer, and it slows me down. Now, I'm already coaching 2 basketball teams, playing in a full-time band, running 2 businesses, and being a single parent. And I would hand her the clothes, and she would put them in the dryer. Why? What's the point? It's slowing me down. I'm getting them involved in learning responsibility. And so not only did we do the laundry together, we talk about it to this day. That's my 26-year-old. And that's a special moment. That's time that I was able to create with my daughter when I could have said, go to your room. It's taking too long. But it's not about John at that time. It's about teaching them responsibility and doing things together. I hated the laundry. That was one of my most hated chores, hated doing the laundry. So it's taken me longer. But if dads would remind themselves, it's really not about you. It's about them. Now, that doesn't mean the world revolves around them, because then you're taking it too far. What I'm talking about is something that might inconvenience you might pay off in the long run for your kids. Does that make sense?
No, okay. That totally makes sense. I have a memory of talking to an older gentleman at one point, and I asked him, I said, you know, what have you learned? He had just held his first grandchild, and I asked him, what have you learned, you know, as a dad? And his response, without even blinking, was, my life's not about me.
That's right.
And I think, you know, that's what you're reminding us, that even something as simple as doing the laundry or wiping the table or picking up the toys, so oftentimes, I know for me, I'm in a rush. I'm like, let's wrap this baby up, you know, let's get on with the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes I miss the opportunity to spend time with them and engage with them on their level.
Well, you have to cherish your moments. I mean, I've been in so many different situations. Life has been a wild ride for me, from divorce to being widowed to being a single dad to getting full custody of the kids and being in a blended family, being in a biologically sound family. I mean, I've been all over the place. And as a marriage minister, I love talking to the husbands about their marriage. That's not about you either. Because being a dad and being a husband is all about servanthood. That's it. Servanthood. You're there to serve your wife. You're there to serve your kids to a point. And maybe we can touch on that in a minute. You and I talked about it. But that's what I'm talking about. When I say serve your kids, do something that will help develop them and instill into them great characteristics that when they are adults, they can take that with them and it will benefit them.
How did you not get sucked into the sort of self-loathing and the kind of woe is me, you know, you experience something that most of us don't experience, the loss of something that we cherish. And it seems like you were able to continue being a father to your children and being there for them and helping them grow. What did that look like? How did that maturity come about? Or was that kind of forced upon you, I guess? Was it, this is the only option?
Well, you actually have two options at that point. And I'm going to give you the main answer here in just a second, but I have two options. I can get out of bed every single morning. Excuse me. Every morning I can get out of bed, throw myself on the floor, kick and scream. Why God me? Why me? Why God? How come I had to lose my vision? How come? Why? And then guess what? When I'm finished with my tantrum, I'm still legally blind. What's the point? So I choose to enjoy it, have fun with it, be thankful for the vision I still have, which is very limited. I've built websites. I've written two books. I'm a master certified coach. I'm a marriage minister, speaker, bowler, drummer. You can quit living if you want, but that does nobody any good. But if you will just step up, and that's why my book's called Stop Your Whining. Seriously, just stop your whining already and do your very best with the blessings that God has given you. He will work with that and he will do things with you that it will blow your mind. And that's my answer to your question. How did I avoid the woe is me? Jesus. The Bible says that if you build your house upon the rock, when the storms come, not if, when the storms come, they will.
Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business? Think again.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. My name is Trey Farrow. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today, only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Beat against your house, but yet you won't fall because your house is built on the rock. And that's metaphoric for building your life in Jesus. If you don't, and those storms come, it says that your house will fall with a great crash. I'm not in the mood to be anywhere near a great crash. I'm liking the foundation, the rock solid foundation. So basically, preparing yourself for those times is key, and not waiting until those times hit before you try to put it all together. Be ready for them by preparing now. So that's my answer. You're not going to get short answers with me, Tim.
No, that's good. I mean, the truth is, as you said, we're all going to face something at some point that will be what will feel catastrophic, depending on, and it might be different degrees, but it may feel catastrophic for us. And at that point, we will either, our house will fall down or it'll stay standing. Yep. And usually in catastrophe, we're not strong enough to hold up our own house.
Correct. Well, and here's the other cool thing about it. I know this is a dad thing, but just encouragement for anybody. God uses my vision in ways that might blow your mind a little bit. I enjoy just making people laugh. Somebody might be having a really bad day. And I've actually had people tell me, here I was doing I was moaning about this. And then I talked to you and you're as happy as can be and you don't even have vision hardly. And I'm sitting here thinking, what do I have to complain about? And I've literally had people tell me that. And it's just, but when the light of Jesus is in you, which I hope it does shine, people notice. And it's just a way to minister to people. Like I'm working with a guy right now, self-development, that he chose me to work with him because of what I've been through. And this guy's not even a Christian. And I've gotten to minister to him. So the vision allowed me to get to someone who probably has never heard the gospel. But anyway, back to the kids.
But I think that shows you, right, that sometimes our most difficult moments, if our life is built on Christ, on the rock, then he can turn those into opportunities, into things that we wouldn't expect them to be, redeem them into something that has a good outcome, something good that comes from it, even though the thing itself may not be a good when we're going through it, may not feel good.
Yep. And we've not even talked about my full marriage history. It's ugly. It is ugly. So what does God do? All right, John, you've got the experience. I'm going to put you and call you to marriage ministry. That's just what he does.
Yeah, and you mentioned you got into marriage ministry because of your experiences. Why don't you tell us a little bit about those? You sort of hit on them a little bit earlier, but let's talk about those a little bit more. Just walk us through. You said you were a single dad.
I was a single dad. I ended up getting married, and that was a blended family. So I've experienced that. But I mean, I want to try to keep it vague, specific but vague, but I've been through everything in marriage except physical abuse. I've experienced it all. And thankfully, I also know what a beautiful marriage is because I had an incredible wife, and unfortunately, she passed away. My parents, as of today, have been married about 56 and a half years. My grandparents, before they passed, were, I think, 72 years. So all of these things that's happened to me is foreign to me. You know, I've just seen my two biggest influences, my parents and my grandparents. I didn't know anything different. That's just the way it was. And so I've gone through some stuff. I make the joke that I feel like I was in a drive-by shooting, standing there on the sidewalk and just boom, out of nowhere. Like, what just happened? So it's been a rough ride, but God, every time has pulled me through. So it's been crazy, to say the least.
Yeah. So you can understand those situations that guys are going through if they feel like it's very difficult.
Correct.
Yeah. What would you tell those guys who have just gone through a hard transition, one of the ones you mentioned, whether that's a divorce or whether it's a death of their loved one? What would you tell them?
I would say that they're going to have scars. There will be scars, but the scars don't define you. They actually remind you that you're more than a conqueror. And if they will just stay focused on Jesus, lean on him for the strength, grieve properly. It's okay to grieve. It's okay to hurt. But there is a time that's going to come that you have to put your feet down and keep moving. You have to. Time's not waiting. And that's exactly what I wrote in my book. There's a point where you got to put your feet on the ground, stand up, know who you belong to, and march forward and let God deal with the rest. When I lost Sherry, it was hard on me and my kids. My kids adored her. They weren't her biological kids, but they absolutely adored that woman. And it was a rough time. However, I look back on that time frame, and to this day, I'm still blown away about the strength and the peace that I had through all of that. It's I can't explain it. You can't describe it. It's just, unless you've dealt with it, there's no way you'll understand it. I mean, I stood at her casket for 4 hours with floods of people coming through, and I spoke at her funeral. And I walked away from her for the last time at the graveyard. Yet, something supernatural took over in my life because I feel like I was grounded. And it's like, God's like, you know, I know you're going through a tough time, but I've got you. You still have purpose because you're still breathing. And that's what I would really encourage people. If you're still breathing, you've still got a purpose. God's going to use you for something if you want to be used. And if you do, tell him. Like, God, I don't know what you're trying to teach me through this, but what is it? What am I learning through all of this? And then how can I use that for his glory ultimately down the road that maybe they'll be able to minister to other people? I never dreamed I'd be a marriage minister ever. I never dreamed because I hated school. Like, I wasn't a stupid kid, but I sure didn't like going, and I didn't do my homework. I didn't study. Hated it. I hated to study. You know what my worst subject was? English. Fast forward. Now I study the Bible. I've written 2 books. And none of that stuff was anything on my radar. I was going to be a Christian rock star. I was going to tour the world. And instead, I'm sitting behind my desk working with couples and hopefully making a difference in people's lives. So mentoring husbands, working with struggling couples. And I do it at no cost. It's all donation based. So, and then hopefully my kids get to see that. Like, man, dad has been through near-death experiences, more than one, lost his vision, lost his wife, and he's still going. And I think even to this day, at their adult ages, I'm hoping it still encourages them. So I don't know if that was the answer. I don't even know what the question was, Tim.
Well, I think we hit on the first item that you've, the first habit that you've put forward in your family, which is showing your kids Jesus by your actions.
Yes.
And that's one of the ways you've done that is through those difficult circumstances, is that God has used those circumstances for you to be able to live out your trust in him.
Yep.
And your children to see that, to see,
yep,
what that looks like.
Yep.
And so the second item that you talked about here was showing your kids what a great marriage looks like. Talk about that a little bit. Why is that important? And what did that look like for you?
Well, you might be your marriage is the marriage to your kids. If they see you and your wife screaming and yelling at each other, not spending time together, that's the pattern of marriage they're going to expect when they finally grow up and get married. But the Bible says that marriage is to be held in honor among all. And that includes your kids. So your spouse is your priority. And if you put your spouse as your priority, you're also prioritizing your kids. Because if you allow life to revolve around your kids, what are they going to expect when they get married? For their spouse to revolve around them. So what you have to do is you have to set a precedent for your kids when they grow up, because most everybody wants to get married. Show them how it's done, not by words, some about words, but mostly action. Again, going back to servanthood. When each spouse serves the other, now your kids are seeing what servanthood looks like. When mom is sick in bed, dad, go make her breakfast, clean up the house. Do whatever you have to do to take care of those kids so mom can rest. And now if you have a son, he's seeing how mom/wife should be treated. If you think about your daughter, if you have a daughter, do you treat your wife the way you would want your daughter's boyfriend to treat her? That's something I would love for every husband/dad to analyze. Do I treat my wife in a way that I would be proud of my daughter's boyfriend if he treated her like that? If not,
question.
Huh?
Convicting question.
Right.
Yeah.
But you have to prioritize your marriage. These kids need to understand how to resolve conflict without the yelling and the screaming, without the silent treatment, which is abuse, by the way, fellas. They need to see you respect your wife even when she's made you mad. They need to see how a Christ-following husband acts, because I like to compare the husband as the shepherd. How in the world can these wolves get to the sheep if the shepherd's not paying any attention to the sheep themselves? And part of that paying attention to the sheep is giving them a great example of how they're supposed to live their lives by action. How you treat your spouse, especially the husbands treating their wives, it will go a long way for their kids. I will give you an example. My dad, I just told you, 56 and a half years married. They were at my house the other day, and my mom was sitting on the couch next to me. My dad was on the love seat. And my dad said, "I'm mad at your mom right now." I'm like, "Oh no, where's he going with this?" I said, "Why?" He said, "Because she's not over here with me." That's 56 and a half years into marriage. I rode to the bank with him. I'm in the back seat. My mom goes in the bank. My dad says, now my dad's 77, mind you. "Your mom sure is looking good today." I said, "Did you tell her that?" He said, "I sure did." I said, "Good." And that man adores his wife. My mom is adored by him. Well, when I was married, I'm legally blind. This is going to sound funny. I would sit back and stare at my wife and watch her every move the best that I could, cherishing those little bitty moments, checking out the mannerisms, the laughter, the way she moved, because I am convinced love is not a feeling. It's not about the butterflies. Throw that in the dumpster. Those things are only byproducts of doing love the right way. Your kids have to see this. If you invest every single day in your spouse, I am convinced you will stay in love and your honeymoon phase will never end. But the moment you take your eyes off of her, Jesus first, her second, and the day you stop investing and taking her for granted is the day that you'll start to separate. And it's an insidious process. And you don't want to go there because it's hard to get back. It can be done. But investment in your spouse, drop the kids off if they're young at a babysitter. And if they don't like it, that's tough. Guys, I'm taking mom out on a date tonight and we're going to get some time together because I know how it is. I told you, I played in a band. I ran two companies, single dad, coached two basketball teams. But when I married Sherry, I had a talk with the kids and basically told them she's now my priority. And you know what? My kids didn't die. They didn't even die. Isn't that amazing? They survived it. They survived it. That way, they'll know how to be married too.
Yeah.
But last thing, I want to say it again. You revolve everything around the kids and you neglect your marriage and you think everything's about you, your kids are going to be raised the same way and they are going to struggle. Don't do that to your kids. What was your question?
No, that's good. I think there is certainly a tendency for parents to focus on the children and forget their marriage. And that is certainly true. And I understand, as you probably do also, all the reasons for that. You know, children require to be cared of. They need care at mm-hmm. certain times, especially when they're young.
Yep.
And they generally won't, understand some of the marriage intricacies. Oh, mother and father, I know you must need some time together. Let me just be quiet for a few minutes while you have a very important conversation. And so they don't tend to understand that quite yet. So there's all kinds of reasons. And of course, life just gets busy when we're driving kids around places and
yep.
people doing extracurriculars. But it's certainly easy to let our marriages become second or third or fourth place instead of first in the human relationship categories.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly right. And Sherry and I, now remember, we had full custody of the kids and she's the one that passed away, but even with the kids, all three of them played sports. And at one point, all three of them were in multiple sports. And it was hard sometimes because it was go, go, go nonstop. For us, there would be times we would go to bed at night and we'd sit and talk for just 3 hours, just sit and talk, just because we didn't have any other time to really do that because I was working at the time and outside the house. But we also went on dates by ourselves too, concerts or whatever, and the kids didn't go sometimes, just so we could have some alone time. So it can be done. You just have to make it happen.
Yeah. So you're even saying that you put aside time, each of you, for your relationship, even if you didn't go out somewhere, you
That's
focused
right.
on at night, you would spend time talking. Did you find that that happened almost every night, or was that a once a week?
It depended if American Idol was on or not. It happened almost every night. We would go to bed and we would just sit and talk. And it might not be a 3 hour conversation. Some of them were. Mm-hmm. It might be 30 minutes, but we did talk. We just had time with us, kids in bed. She and I just sat and talked. We did things like we played Yahtzee with the kids. That was our thing. My kids call her the Yahtzee master. And as a matter of fact, when she passed away, my son tweeted that out. He said, "Fly high, you Yahtzee master." Mm. Maurice, let me tell you what I did. Do I have time to tell a quick story?
Yeah, do it.
This is what I did back in 1999. First of all, these kids did not ask to be on this planet. Dad, you're responsible for them being here. And if you're responsible for them being here, you need to be responsible for taking care of them and helping them be raised to be kids that are going to be responsible adults that are independent. And they don't have to cling on mom and dad's shirt tails anymore. That's the way we're supposed to raise them. There has to be a good combination of quality time with them and discipline. Just because you're involved with your kids and all of that doesn't mean you don't discipline them. As a matter of fact, the Bible says God disciplines those he loves. And I would even argue you might not love your kids as much as you think you do if you don't discipline them for their wrongs, because you're not teaching them anything except they can get away with it. And when they get to be adults, guess what happens? I know somebody like that. I can get away with anything because I never got in trouble. And I believe in being friends with your kids, especially in the later years, but your priority is not to be friend when they're being raised. Your priority is dad. So, and I know what your podcast is called or your interview thing is called. So I'm not saying not be a friend, but too many people want to be friends more than parents and guardians, right?
Yeah.
So back in 1999 on Father's Day, I eat up everything. I'm very sentimental. And I would pick up on the things my kids would say. And I'm like, man, you're not going to be able to remember all of this stuff because you can't run the video camera 24/7. So I got on my computer, opened up a Word document, and I named it My Kids Diary. I put a picture of them at the top, their birth dates, their weights, and full names. I started documenting the smallest of things they would do. One of my favorites. Now, I'm a big Kentucky fan, and anybody who watches sports knows that Kentucky and Louisville are arch rivals. So my son at 4 years old has his little Tykes goal and his basketball, and he's in the basement. He looks at me and he just gets this look on his face and he says, "Daddy, Louisville stinks." And I kind of chuckle and I'm like, "Yeah, buddy, Louisville stinks." And then this, you can see the light bulb go off. And he says, "And Kentucky smells good, And that just cracked me up. So I go straight to the computer and I start typing out the story. I thought, I'm going to do this for them as a lifetime gift. I'm going to document this. And then I decided that the first Christmas we have when there are no kids at the house will be the year I give it to them. It happened to be 20 and a half years of documenting their wow. stories, their athletic news articles, everything. This document ended up being over 1,200 pages, 750,000 words.
Wow.
Not only that, I created Excel sheets for every kid, for every sport, and they've gotten their stats, how many goals they kicked, how many points they scored, how many touchdowns they got, receiving yards, assists if they were in the on the volleyball court. Every single year from 1999 on, they've got all of their stats.
Wow. What a special gift.
Well, that's kind of my point. You might not have that ability or that amount of time. However, if you're not going to give them anything like that, at least give them the gift of you. Be a dad. Take your sons out on fishing trips instead of you and your buddies. Take your daughters out on dates and open their car doors. Let them feel what it likes to be treated like a princess. So they will pick a good man because you know what they say, daddy issues? You need to be a dad to these girls, especially if you have girls. But you also need to be one for your son so he knows what a real man is. And let me tell you something. A real man is not, I stick out my chest and I'm a big bad dude and somebody cuts me off, I'm going to cuss at them and I'm going to flip them off and threaten them. And that's not a real man. That's a real baby. Sorry if I offended anybody, but not sorry. A real man is godly strong, which is the title of my book. That's why I named it that. This macho strong garbage has to go. When you look at the fruits of the spirit, it talks a lot about self-control and faithfulness and gentleness and love and patience and goodness and kindness. You want to be a real man? Get in the Galatians 5 and read the fruits of the spirit and analyze yourself amongst those words and learn the real meaning of those words, because they can be a little fuzzy if you don't really dig down into the original language, which is something I'm doing right now. That's what a real man is. That's a real man. Because any man can puff out their chest, but not every man can go, honey, I'm so sorry I hurt you. That's a real man.
Yeah, no, that's really good. To be observed is that in that list, arrogance isn't one of the items in that list.
Right, right. And you know what? Submission to the wife. People love to bring that one out. Well, my wife's supposed to submit to me. Read the first verse of the marriage covenant. It says, submit one to another out of reverence for Christ. Ephesians 5:21. The next verse says, wives to your own husbands. The word submit's not even in there. They put it in the translation to bring clarity to the verse because it's an extension of submit one to another. So that's the first verse of the marriage covenant, is submitting to each other. I've got all kinds of stuff on marriage. We're supposed to be talking about parenthood. I'm sorry.
No, that's good. They're interrelated. So
very much.
So true. Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah. But I mean, that idea of submission, right? That goes along with what you're showing your children a marriage would look like. And as you mentioned, you know, if a man has an arrogant perspective towards his wife or thinks that he rules over her somehow, that's what children are going to learn that marriage looks like, and that would be false.
Yeah. If you are dominating over your wife and demanding that she submit to you, I would say this, how dare you? The Bible doesn't demand her to submit to you. The word submit is a willingness. That's what it means, a willingness to submit to your leadership. But don't you dare tell her to submit to you until you can follow verses 25 through 31. Love your wife as Christ loved the church, gave himself up for her, presented her holy and blameless. Here's another verse for you. This definitely goes for dads. And I always get these two verses confused where they are. 1 Timothy 5:8, if a person does not provide for his relatives, especially his own household, what are the results of that? It says, he has denied the faith and is considered worse than an unbeliever. But now we have to know what the word provide means. I make 150 grand a year. Of course I'm providing for them. Give it up. You're going to lose that argument. Here's why. Does that have a bit of a meaning of what provide means? Absolutely. But the word provide in the original language, in the Greek, it means, here you go, seeing ahead. You're looking ahead. You're looking forward. So how you're treating your wife, what's that going to do for you in the next 10 minutes or the next day, month, year, decade? What's that doing to your kids in the next day, month, year, decade? Are you looking ahead for your actions today and how they're going to turn out in your kids and the consequences of your wife down the road? Are you tearing her down and your kids are seeing you tear her down? Well, that's what they expect now when they get married. Oops, I hit my keyboard. I get fired up. If you do not look ahead in every move you make, I'm not talking about big stuff. I'm talking about everything. If I don't look ahead, if I decide to let my kids stay up without a bedtime on a school night, you're not looking ahead to the consequences. They're going to be tired in school. They're not going to focus. They're probably going to get in trouble because of a lack of attention. You're not looking ahead. That's provision in a marriage and in the aspect of parenthood. You've got to look ahead as the man of that house to make sure everything you do has a positive result moving forward. Make sense? Did I make sense?
Yeah, no, that's good. So the idea of providing would be providing the financially. We've established that that's part of it. But more important than that, providing vision and direction, protection, establishing the direction of the home. You mentioned looking out for what your kids' actions will turn into in the future and what the consequences of those are. And so those are fantastic ways that I think all men should focus in on.
That's right. That's all part of provision.
Being a father, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And one more marriage aspect, because I hear this too, since there are men probably listening. Do not say I'm the head of the house and what I say goes, because I can prove this scripturally. Your wife is also the head of the house. And I know you probably just fell off your chair, didn't you, Tim?
Yeah, tell me about that.
Okay. In 1 Timothy 3, it gives the qualifications of an overseer of a church. And it says, if a man cannot manage his own household, how can he manage God's church? Uh-huh. And another qualification is he must manage his household well. The word manage there is prestimi, and it means this. Hold on. Ruler, master. Okay. So you're the ruler and the master of your house. Now go to chapter 5. And Paul tells women, I wish the younger women would get married, have kids, and manage their house well so that Satan will not malign God's word. Paraphrased. The word manage there is a different Greek word, but guess what it means? Master, ruler. Now it means she manages household affairs. He manages the spiritual and relational aspect of the house. So when you want to say you're the head of the house, let's go with that. That means you're the spiritual head. How much are you in your Bible studying the word to lead your family in the ways of Jesus? Don't start throwing up this stuff. Well, I'm the head of the house. What I say goes. That's not what it means. It means you're the spiritual and relational head of the house. She is the domestic manager of the house. So she's responsible for managing the household. You might want to listen to her. Sherry's a great example. She managed all of our money. I didn't say, hey, I'm the head of the house. I handle the money. And what I say goes with the money. I gave her complete autonomy over the money. You know why? She was good with it. I submitted to her, Ephesians 5:21. And I said, whatever you decide, I'm good with. But you know what she did? John, I wouldn't mind getting a new car. I said, ours is still running. Why do we need a new car? She's like, well, I just would like to have one. I said, I don't think this is really the time. We should be looking at that. She said, okay, end of the story. You know why? She trusted me. Why did she trust me? Because she knew that decision wasn't based on out of selfishness. It was based on what's best for our family. And it turned out it worked out perfectly because 2 or 3 years later, we got a brand new car. And it's a wild story, but it worked out beautifully. If you want your wife to submit to you, then you make sure she trusts that what you're making in the decision realm is not selfish. And that also spills over to your kids. The more selfishness you show, the more selfishness they learn. And we know kids aren't selfish at all, right, Tim? There's no selfishness in kids at all. I've never had a kid say anything selfish to me ever. Do you feel the sarcasm tripping off the screen?
I
right
do.
Now?
Yep, I do.
And then if you're selfish and it's got to be your way or the highway, your kids are learning that's the way it is. You're not providing for them.
No, I think that's really good, because I think that is kind of what it comes down to on the core level of a dad learning to mature. It is saying no to self and saying, and that would be saying no to selfishness, saying no to self and saying yes to something else, something bigger, either what God says is right or wrong, or what's good for my wife and my children, and not simply thinking about what I would like to do today, or what I want to do this weekend, or how I want to spend the money, the toys I want to get, the meal I want to eat tonight, yeah. And thinking more as a steward over his family. And I think that's, you probably hit something good, and that is, or hit something accurate, and that is that selfishness is a driver, I think, for a lot of dads. And it's hard to see, I think, because our culture encourages.
That's right. Yeah.
Our culture encourages us to think about ourselves first, and in fact, justifies it. And I do think this is an accurate, if thought of the right way, the putting the mask on first on the airplane is an accurate way to talk about it. Except you don't put your mask on the airplane first so that you can save yourself. You put your mask on first so that you can help others. And that's a different, like those two ways of thinking about it. Some people will say, yeah, of course you got to take care of yourself first. That's why you got to put your mask on in an airplane. You put your mask on first so that you look out for your own interests first. But that's not why.
That's
right.
You
put your mask on first so that you can help others, not so you can help yourself, you know, or not primarily so you can help yourself, you know. So,
well, because the kids aren't going to know how to do it.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a perfect example. Matter of fact, that made me think of another analogy. Have you heard the baby elephant analogy? Mm-hmm. Oh, this is awesome. And this is, if I could give any dad's advice right now, it would simply be get a hold of them while they're young, because that will save you a lot of trouble down the road. Trying to start disciplining them at 13 to 14 years old and all that is not going to cut it. So, and here's the analogy. Mm-hmm. You go to the zoo and you see the elephants. They're next to the fence and they've got that rope tied around their leg, which is tied to a stake, right? You know what I'm talking about?
I'm just believing that what you're saying is true. I've never seen the elephant tied to the stake, but I'll go with it. Sure.
Okay. Well, if you go to the zoo, I know there were a couple of elephants. There's a stake in the ground. There's a rope tied around the stake. The other side of the rope is tied around their leg. Well, how come the elephants don't just pull that stake out of the ground and do what they want? Because they're perfectly capable of it.
Yeah, they're big and strong.
That's right. But they don't do it. Why? Because when they were babies, they were too weak to pull the stake out of the ground, and that rope was tied around their leg and they couldn't get away. They were trained that it doesn't work. As they got older, they just quit trying to do the wrong thing because they were trained it's not going to work. So those adult elephants can easily pull that stake out of the ground. They just don't, because they were trained at a young age. Now imagine trying to train an adult elephant and saying, let me tie this around that stake and try to get them to not pull it out. It's not going to work. It's the same thing with kids. Boundaries is a beautiful thing. Set the boundaries for these kids. Tell them what is accepted. You don't teach your kids about sex. You know who's going to? Their buddies in junior high school or elementary, or the girl that doesn't know any better either. Don't complain about them getting into bad stuff when you've not even talked to them about it.
Yeah. You know, I looked at a stat very recently, and there's an organization called the Institute for Family Studies, and they did a meta study on parent and child relationships. And they concluded that parent-child relationship is one of the greatest factors on whether an adolescent and then an adult will struggle with mental health issues. Uh-huh. And they defined the way a parent interacts with their child, the best outcomes come from parents who are warm, loving, rule-bound, and disciplined. That was the conclusion of the study.
Yes.
Those characteristics in parenting had the best outcomes for a child's mental health.
Yep.
And that goes along with what you're saying, you know, the idea of having love and discipline together, that both Correct. Those things are important. You can't have discipline without love. It's just punishment. It's punitive. And then this idea of love without any boundaries is not really love in and of itself. It's something
That's right.
else. And so I think you're onto something really
great. Well said.
There. So Tell us a little bit about your what you're doing, how people can get in touch with you.
You can, my main website's theblindfury.com, T-H-E, don't forget the word theblindfury.com. I am not the rapper, so don't ask. I've actually had a pastor, when I was doing a men's conference for him, he asked me if I was the rapper. I'm like, no. I'm a drummer for a reason, but theblindfury.com is how you can find me. If you have marriage issues and you need help working through some stuff, you can contact me through there, but the marriage ministry is called Marital Monkey because I'm a bit of a goofball. It's called, the motto is helping you get those marital monkeys off your back and putting the fun back in marriage.
And people can visit with you, you said, at donation only, so no cost, but people can donate to your organization.
And I mentor husbands too. That's one of my favorite things to do. I love to mentor husbands. They get a hold of me. They're like, I need to be romantic on my anniversary. What do I do? Well, let's talk about it. Literally, I've had that happen. But I love to mentor husbands, especially younger husbands who want to be godly strong for their wife. And then when they're dads or if they're already dads, I love that. And that's also, I work with everybody, just like you said, it's all donation based. The donations are eligible for tax deductions because I am a 501c3 ministry. If you can't afford it, you get the same passion, the same commitment from me. It doesn't matter to me. I'm doing what I'm called to do. I let God be my accountant. And I just love working with people. Anything I can do to help someone improve is what I'm all about. So yeah, especially husbands. Love working with the husbands.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, John. I really appreciate all your time today. It's been a fantastic conversation. Well,
thanks for having me, Tim. I love what you're doing, man. It's awesome. I appreciate you for doing it.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter, or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.